Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com. It is, of course, home of the ambitious upstart. And what people tell me is that the reason that they listen to Mixergy interviews is because I go in depth with entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. This isn't the place to come if you're a wantrepreneur and just want to get excited about somebody having started a company. It's also apparently not the place to go if you want to just listen to somebody talk slowly because, man, Clay, I'm rapid fire talking here. Joining me today is Clay Collins. He is a longtime Mixergy fan and a guy who came on here to say once back in 2012 that listening to Mixergy interviews inspired him to go from creating information products to creating software. And at the time, in 2012, he only had two pieces of software that he had. These two little pieces of software that weren't really connected into a company. But he used some of the techniques that he's talked about for years when he was teaching online marketing, including and especially pre-selling, which is something that he actually taught here to Mixergy Premium members. He taught pre-selling, and you should go and learn from him. The course is still up on Mixergy. And at the time, people said, yeah, pre-selling works for information products, but it won't really work for sophisticated software companies. And so Clay used it, and he proved people wrong. He pre-sold his product. By pre-selling, he learned what people wanted. He integrated what they wanted into his software. And as a result, he created the software that's now a monster hit. We'll talk about how big it is. But first, I should tell you that Clay Collins is the founder of Lead Pages. Leadpages.net is where you go to find it. And what you'll see there is a collection of tools for capturing leads and turning them into customers. And we'll talk about how he came up with the idea for it, how he grew this business to such a big degree. We'll talk about what his revenues are, and we'll talk about what his current challenges are now that the company is so big. And we'll do it all thanks to two sponsors that I'll tell you about later. The first is a company that will host your website. It's called HostGator. And the second is a company that will find you a developer. It's called TopTal. First, Clay, welcome.
Andrew, it is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, so good to have you here. How big is the company revenue-wise? How much revenue did you guys bring in 2015?
Yeah, so in 2015, we brought in, I believe, just over $20 million in revenue, or $20 million in bookings, and $16 million in revenue.
What's the difference between bookings and revenue?
So bookings is just like cash in the door. So just money that hit your bank account during a given year. And there's something called GAAP accounting, and that allows you to declare a certain portion of the income that you brought in as having been earned by the business. So if you have an annual plan for a software product and you charge for 12 months at a time, you're only allowed to declare 1/12 of that as hitting the books each month as revenue. So just because we've brought in X number of dollars doesn't mean that we can declare it all as revenue, which is sometimes frustrating to me because sometimes we'll crush it during a given month and that, you know, we can't go to our investors and say, hey, like, check this out, because it's not MRR yet. It's not monthly recurring revenue yet.
And that's because you chose to go with the accrual accounting method as opposed to the cash accounting method, which is actually really good for you. It means that you don't have to pay as much in taxes, right?
It's true.
I'm looking at your Crunchbase entry, and you guys have raised a ton of money. How much money have you raised?
We've raised $38 million in venture capital.
What do you say to somebody who sees $38 million and says, of course the guy's doing $16 million. Of course he's doing $20 million in cash in the door. He just raised $38 million.
Yeah, a couple things. One, you know, I'd point to the fact that up until about 4 months ago, we hadn't touched any of the $38 million that we'd raised. So we've been cash flow positive for much of this. And I'd also really say that, you know, unless your business plan is to take $1 million, take every dollar and turn it into 50 cents, then, I mean, I guess you could do that, right? But that's not what we're doing. we had monster traction before we raised each of our
rounds.
You
really did. I don't know why then. Why did you raise? If you were doing so well, you had a cash flow positive business that was growing. You didn't touch the money for a long time. Your first round of funding, you didn't touch until well after you raised another round of funding.
Yeah.
Why then? Why did you raise money in the beginning?
Yeah, there's a few reasons. I think a big piece of it was basically an obligation that I felt to our employees. So we had people moving here. We had people quitting jobs at large, secure companies and coming to work for a startup. And granted, you know, we're never, you know, it's never going to be a Fortune 500. Well, we maybe will be a Fortune 500 company, but in the short term, that's not going to happen. I wanted to be able to sleep at night knowing that LeadPages wasn't going to rise or fall based on whatever was happening next month. I wanted to be able to be a bit more medium term in our thinking. So I think that was part of it. I think another part of it is that I really liked the venture capitalists that we were talking with at the time, and I like the ones that we've raised from. A lot of people have this very binary opinion about venture capital, and there's lots of debates, like venture capital, is it good or bad? And that's kind of like saying marriage, is it good or bad? Well, you know, half of those end up in divorce, apparently, and people don't generally go around bashing marriage. I think a venture capital partnership is the same way. Like, there's a few people that suck, or maybe a lot of them who suck, and there's a few who are really right for you. And and we found the right ones.
It was at the time the Foundry Group. You kept the money in the bank. You didn't touch it. You kept growing your business. But when you hired someone, you were able to say, "Don't worry. Yeah, we're a startup in Minneapolis, but you didn't just go and take a flyer on some unknown company. We have money in the bank, and a well-known investor put it in there." Before we started, you were telling me about how, going all the way back to before LeadPages really got going, you were writing really intense content. And then you were watching this guy, Gary Vaynerchuk, do what, and what happened to him?
Yeah, so I, back in the day, I used to write like these really complex thought pieces, or maybe they were complex to me at the time. I would spend like 3 or 4 days writing a 3,000 to 4,000 word blog post, and I would post it to my marketing blog, and it was called The Marketing Show. And I'd get like maybe 20, 25 comments. It was kind of the heyday of blogging. And I saw this guy, Gary Vaynerchuk, and he would just pull like 3 wines off the shelf and uncut. He would taste them all and extemporaneously like rate them, comment on them, be like, "Well, this one smells like grass combined with like horse sweat," or like whatever he was saying, yeah, a dirty sock. And he would get millions of views. And I was pissed because I would spend forever creating this content, and here this guy was making it very quickly. So I wanted to find a cadence where I could create content that was high value with that kind of speed. So yeah, what I did was in every episode of The Marketing Show, I switched to a video format. In every episode, I would review a landing page. I would talk about any test data I had on it. I talked about how it worked, why it worked, and instances that where people would want to use it. And then we gave it away. I hired this 18-year-old guy in Brazil to make a template from an example that I had, and then we hired this group in India for $69. They would turn the PSD, the Photoshop file, into an HTML file, and we gave it away, and it was awesome. People loved it. There were lots of responses. I had record engagement. I was like, screw this, I'm not going to write another blog article again.
So all in, you were paying under $200 to have this landing page both designed as a PST and cut up into HTML and CSS that anyone could put on their site.
Correct.
And you told me before we started that is where you got the initial feedback that then allowed you to create lead pages, that you were starting to amass an understanding of what people wanted in landing pages. And what were some of the original pieces of feedback that you collected when you did that?
Yeah, so a lot of it is the same stuff that we hear today. So people wanted more integrations. People wanted to be able to run split tests. People wanted to take a lead and send it to multiple sources. People wanted all kinds of different things, but many of them were around types of pages, and they were around integrations, and then they were around places to deploy the content. So they wanted to publish to WordPress, or they wanted to publish to Wix or Weebly, or they wanted to publish to a Facebook tab at the time because people were doing that, or people wanted, you know. So it was around ways of publishing, integrations, and types of pages at the time.
Was there one that especially kept coming up over and over again that you could actually solve before you created software?
You know, in terms of integrations, yeah, I could dig up, and I was pissed at first. I was like, why are all these people complaining? What do you guys want for free? Like, this is free. Do you get it? It's free. And so at first I was frustrated. I was like digging up how-to articles and trying to explain, you know, how to make this stuff work. And at some point, I just realized that in order to give people what they really, really wanted, I was going to need to charge for it. So that's kind of when we started the pre-sell.
So what's the first thing that you pre-sold?
The first thing we pre-sold was a minimum viable version of lead pages. And people say, you know, I've heard people say that if you're not embarrassed by the first version of your product, then you waited too long to release. Well, we didn't wait too long to release. Let's just say
you
that
were embarrassed. This is Welcome Gate.
No, this was the very first version of Lead Pages that came out, the pre-sell beta version.
Before or after Welcome Gate?
Welcome Gate was one of the templates that we turned into a WordPress plugin, and that was a way to grow our audience kind of at the very beginning of the launch. So what I realized was everyone was giving away free reports and all kinds of things like that, and that probably the best lead generation mechanism ever is maybe a more concentrated form of knowledge, which might be software. So we gave away a WordPress plugin called Welcome Gate, which was honestly based on what Mixergy was doing to capture leads at the time. So we took what you had done, we turned it into a template, and then we made a free WordPress plugin that's GPL, so anyone can, you know, copy it or fork it or whatever you call it. And we gave that away for the leads.
And a Welcome Gate is the first page that people see when they come to a website that tells them what the site's about, and it asks them to enter an email address so they could continue on to the site and also get updates via email. And so that's the first thing you did just to capture email addresses, with the idea that eventually, Clay, you were going to create something called Lead Pages, or did you not even know at the time what you were going to do? You were just trying to collect your own email addresses.
Yeah, we were just trying to create something that would grow our audience. So we were hungry for email addresses. We were hungry for more people to hear when we put out new content. And I just saw that there was kind of this snowball that was emerging around giving this template, giving away these templates. People were okay. opting in to get them. And I wanted more where that came from. So I was like, well, what if we up the ante and invest a little bit more into creating some more high value content?
Okay. So then tell me about the first thing you pre-sold, the first piece of software.
Yeah, so the first piece of software that we pre-sold was a video player called Lead Player, which was, in retrospect, really simple. It was just a wrapper around a YouTube video, and it allowed you to collect an email address prior to watching a video, so someone would have to opt in to watch a video, or it would allow you to put a pause in the middle of a video where the video stopped and you had to enter your email address to continue watching, or you could have it at the very end and you could turn on or off a continue or an option for people to watch without opting in, and it had either an opt-in or a call to action button where someone could click on the button and go to something else. And that was called Lead Player. And I believe that requests for that kind of functionality, we were doing that before Wistia, and I don't believe in like they stole from us or anything, but definitely people started going to Wistia for asking for that kind of thing, and now Wistia does it too, which is cool. I think it's something that more video players should have.
You know what? I went to look at it a while back, and I don't see it anymore. What happened to it?
Yeah, so the thing with Welcome Gate is that we were really dependent on YouTube.
With Lead Player, you were dependent
on
YouTube.
I'm sorry. With Lead Player, we were really dependent upon YouTube. So I remember when we first launched it, the video counts weren't being registered because of the API call we were making. You had to actually find this little known API call to get a video to play in order for the views to count towards the YouTube view count, which everyone wanted. So I had to go to Google I.O., the developers conference, and like my only agenda going there was I was going to sit at the YouTube support desk and like hound them until they showed me how to get this to work. So I had like the developer online, and I was sitting at the desk, and we were like going through the code, and they called out someone else, and like finally I got in touch with the person, and we got that to work. But I just realized that, you know, I didn't want to build a product that was so dependent on a free technology from a company that really didn't provide technical support. I think if they charged for it and we got some sort of guaranteed support contract or an SLA, I would have been okay with it. But I wasn't interested in that long term.
I see. And so every time they made a change, you had to either keep up with it or just say, you know what, it's done. And you decided this is not the business I want to be in.
Exactly. And okay. it was a WordPress plugin. So there was sort of this Venn diagram of like video, WordPress, and people who care about lead generation. So it was a constrained market too.
Yeah,
I mean, it was captive at about $50,000 a month, and we weren't doing a lot of promotion for that $50,000 a month in revenue, but it was kind of capped there.
So how did the free landing pages you created, and specifically the feedback you got from them, help you create this lead player? What are some of the things that you use when you created the lead player?
Yeah, so it was a WordPress plugin, and I don't know that we had a grand theory about things. What we knew was that people really cared a lot about lead generation, and we knew we had a developer who knew how to create a WordPress plugin. We knew the WordPress plugin community was large, and we knew this was a problem that we could solve. And it was a problem that we could solve with about, you know, a month and a half to 2 months of development and get to market quickly and learn as a business whether or not we could even do software. I mean, it's just a different kind of business. You have to support it. There's constant bug fixes. So we were doing information products and selling training and coaching and consulting. We wanted to transition to software, and I think we just wanted to get our foot in the pond. We wanted to move quickly. We didn't want to do some big pie-in-the-sky science project and come back 18 months later and find out that it wasn't going to work. We just wanted to do something, and it was something that we knew we could do.
Okay. And in our previous interview, we talked about how a non-developer like you could actually create software for the first time. So I won't repeat it. I'll let people go back and listen to it. But still recovering from a cold a little bit. Going back to what you said about pre-selling, how did you pre-sell it?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's outlined in the Mixergy premium course that's available. But it was basically we were using it on our own videos. We asked people if they'd like something like that for commercially available. They said yes. Then we went back and asked them what was important to them. So we had a survey. They responded. We went back to them and said, here's what we think you want. Can you confirm that this is true? They said yes. Then we gave away, you know, some content on video marketing, and of course more people opted into that. And of course the whole way we were like sort of seeding that this product was coming. Then we did a contest where we asked people what was important in a product like this or why they'd buy. They told us, they basically were writing copy for us in the comments, and we allowed two people who entered into that contest to get a copy of the product for free. Then we told people that it was coming the next day, and then we launched it. And you know, I don't remember how much we did for that. I know how much we did for the initial pre-sell of lead pages, but I don't know what the initial pre-sell value was for lead player.
So the contest was just your way of understanding why they wanted the player, right?
Yeah, the contest does a few different things. So when you do this type of contest, and there's exact copy, because I'm just referencing the course because I don't remember exactly what the copy was, but the gist of it is, you know, people can enter into this contest to get a free copy of Lead Player. So the question is, please tell us why this product is a perfect fit for you and your business. And that makes a few things happen. One, a whole bunch of people enter, so it creates social proof because other people are reading the comments. The social proof they're getting is a whole bunch of people saying why it's the perfect product for their business. So everyone's reading the comments and reading why, basically testimonials for a product that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
Then when people are leaving comments, they're trying to fish for ways that they could use this product in their own business. So a large percentage of the people who enter the contest who don't win end up buying because of consistency and commitment, and just sort of cognitively they've sold themselves on it. And then also we get to use the copy, and we discover use cases and headlines. And if you do this right, you can get so many interesting comments that you're basically just cutting and pasting from among the comments to create your headline and your sales letter and your use cases.
All right, there's an important question for me to ask as a follow-up, but first I've got to talk about my sponsor, which is Top Towel. Have you heard of Top Towel before, Clay?
I have, because I listen to Mixergy, and I hear about Top Towel quite a bit. Sounds like a cool business.
Amazing company. They've got a network of developers, all pre-tested, all gone through a whole, like, basically maybe a hazing process to make sure they're the right ones. And so when someone calls up TopTal and says, I want to hire a developer or a team of developers, they have a group of people who are already ready to go. All they have to do is just make sure they understand what the business is looking for, and then they go back to their network and find the right people. Let me ask you this. As someone who is not a developer yourself, you didn't spend your life trying to code and become a coder. When you're hiring someone, when you're hiring a developer, what are some of the things that you look for? And we'll include that in the ad for TopTal.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I look for is alignment around business outcomes, not just around sort of what's interesting with a project from a engineering perspective, but I think during the early days of a startup, you want people who really get a kick out of seeing the numbers go up. You know, it may or may not take an interesting engineering feat to make that happen, but there are engineers who find that to be satisfying in and of itself. So that's one of the main things that I look for.
I see. So not someone who just wants to build out what you're asking for, but gets excited about watching the points go up when they see people use it, when they see people use it more than they expected.
Exactly.
How do you test for that when you're looking for someone?
I think it's during the interview process. You just talk shop and find out, like, what are the interesting war stories? What do they really enjoy? And during the early stages, they're describing success as kind of related to the success of a product, and not necessarily like there was this hairy like algorithm that we needed to solve, right, and then we solved it, and then that may or may not have created value for the customer. Sometimes it doesn't create value for the customer at all. So hearing that they care about traction more than they care about whatever interesting problem. Now, you want those types of developers later in your business, but certainly not for the MVP.
Right, right. You want somebody who gets excited about seeing people use it, who wants to get excited about the traction. If that's what you're looking for, go to toptal.com/Mixergy. One of the first things that you'll do is you'll get set up with a conversation with someone at TopTal. Let them know this is the kind of person you're looking for. You will not have to have all the interviews with developers when you sign up for TopTal. They have people who already will do that, who already will go through their list of developers and find the right person for you. So you say, I'm looking for someone who uses this language, who codes this way, who will communicate with us using these tools that we use, and because Clay Collins told me that I should be looking for someone who gets excited about traction, here's what traction looks like for me. I need somebody who can get excited about that, who can feel like a partner in the business when they're working on this product. And then they will go out into the network of developers, find the right person. You can still ask questions, follow up, and if it's a match, you can get started often within a couple of days. All you have to do is go to toptal.com/Mixergy. When you put that /Mixergy at the end, they're going to give you 80 free developer hours when you pay for 80, and they'll give you a guarantee to make sure that you are happy or you will not pay. Go look at toptal.com/Mixergy for details.
You know what I like about this kind of thing is, you know, I was talking to someone who used, I believe it was TopTal, and what they said was that there's this whole, like, side gig economy or side project economy where there's developers from, you know, from Google, from Facebook, from, you know, from Stripe, from all over, that just want to do work on interesting projects on the side because maybe they're working on some, like, big enterprise infrastructure and they just want to, like, do something that's maybe for more front-end oriented, or they want to do something else. So you can end up and this person had, you know, developers from these companies that otherwise they would have no business hiring.
No access to, because they're not looking for extra work by posting ads online. They're not responding to your, but they do have extra hours, and you're right. I think a lot of people think of TopTal as full-time, long-term commitment hires, but you can hire someone for a few hours a week, someone who just wants to be challenged by your project and can get psyched about working at a startup if that's the stage that you're in. And of course, if you want to hire a developer team, they have that too. And I'm grateful to them for sponsoring. And Clay, here's the question that I'm wondering. You're getting all this feedback from people. Does it just change the marketing, or does it also change the actual product?
It changes everything. It changes everything.
Give me an example of how the product changed.
Yeah. So, you know, it affected the order of the integrations that we put out. It affected the initial templates that we launched with. It affected, you know, things that we didn't know at first, like that most people were sending integrations to or sending leads to multiple sources after they opted in. So someone might opt in for a webinar, and someone might want to send that lead to GoToWebinar and to MailChimp, and they maybe want to put it into Salesforce, depending on what kind of business they had going on. So, we knew to do that. We knew that people cared more about being able to publish pages to a Facebook page or to WordPress, and they cared about like subdomain mapping. We found out so many things this way, and I think that it not only changed me, but you know, we were about 8 people at the time, and I think everyone in the company was watching the launch. So it made sure that from day one, the entire business was not as concerned about like productivity or engineering velocity, but they were concerned about speed of value delivery to the market. Everyone was reading all the comments, even the people providing support, even the engineers, even, you know, everyone. Everyone was watching this thing unfold. And so I think that from day one, we had an orientation towards the market that most businesses never see. Most people, you know, like if most people in a business, it's like there's a series of concentric circles. There's them, and then there's their department, and then there's the company, and then there's the customers, and then there's sort of prospective customers, and then there's the market. And so getting out from that internal circle and getting to the point where you're aware of the market is like so hard for 95% of businesses, 98% of businesses. And at the very beginning, we had that from day one because we pre-sold. So it did that. It also set the pace of, you know, it allowed us to set the pace of innovation within the company. We knew we were going to move quick, that we were going to respond. It also established a pattern that we maintain to this day of responding to every single tweet, every single blog comment, every single Facebook comment. It set us up for success. And okay, I'm so glad we did it.
And that piece of software took off. It was actually selling. And I remember you doing a lot of hustling also around it. You emailed me. You emailed Pat Flynn. You emailed people links to Pat Flynn's video describing it. And so things started to take off. You then realized, all right, it's time to create a software-based business, right? At that point, you had the idea for lead pages. You know what I'm wondering before we get into how you marketed lead pages by using this pre-selling? You didn't have the .com for lead pages. Why did you start a business when you could only get leadpages.net and couldn't get the .com?
Yeah, I think it was the right name for the product. And even to this day, I hear people referring to landing pages as lead pages. So it was a easy way to describe it. Everyone knew what it was. There's, you know, you can hear lead pages. You basically, if you're in marketing, you have a sense of like what that is. So it was the right name for the business. And I think too many people get caught up in sort of this vanity thing about if it's .com or .net or whatever. And I think at the end of the day, branding matters more than sort of whatever the three-letter extension is. So, you know, if you look at Tesla, they're not at Tesla.com, or at least a month ago they weren't. They're at TeslaMotors.com. If you look at Square, they're at SquareUp.com. You know, Facebook was at TheFacebook.com. And I think it's just stupid. I mean, people just optimize for the wrong thing, I think, often in business, especially when they're starting. And so we were like, we just didn't want to let that get in our way. So we could have done .co or a bunch of different things, and we just went forward.
I think all the ones that you mentioned had eventually changed. Of course, the Facebook became Facebook.com. Square now owns Square.com, but it redirects to SquareUp. I think as of a little while ago, Tesla bought Tesla.com. You tried to actually get leadpages.com. What happened?
I respect the owner of that domain. They wanted They wanted tens of millions and even into the, or tens of thousands and even into the hundreds of thousands to pay for a seat at the negotiation table. In other words, they wanted us to pay for their time in negotiating, and we just weren't open to
Wait, doing they wanted
that.
To pay just to negotiate? It wasn't tens of thousands for the domain. You're saying just for time to talk to us, you have to pay.
Yeah.
I see.
Starting at 25 grand with no assurance that we would even...
And that was a no-go for you?
That wasn't possible.
And have you thought about changing? I thought I saw leadpages.co being used a couple of times.
Yep. So we own leadpages.co is where people publish pages. We own center.com. So we'll be at some point changing things to that.
Will the whole business be going over to center.com?
Eventually, yeah.
Eventually, I see. Okay. Yeah, and center.com now redirects to center.io.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Wow. I see you actually cringing as I talk about this. I've been like a little reluctant to ask follow-up questions after seeing how painful it is for you to talk about it.
Oh, no, it's just going to be it's a monstrous project. It's a monstrous project. So, I mean, the truth is that the term lead pages, while it's very accurate and lets people know exactly what it is, you know, I think, you know, we started off in info products and then we had a bigger appetite, so we moved to WordPress plugins, and we had a bigger appetite, so we moved to software as a service, and, you know, we're kind of in this category of tools, but we have a bigger appetite, and so we'll be making a shift toward, you know, to be a platform. And so
I see
it's
the bigger appetite. Like, you went beyond pages when you went to phone numbers, when you went to lead boxes, right?
Yep.
Now people could text in if they want to join a list as opposed to going over to a specific page. And then you moved into automation. So once you capture an email address using a lead page software, what do you do with it? Well, that's automation, and that's what Center is, and that's what you guys are moving towards. All right, let's go back a little bit more to pre-selling and talk about how you pre-sold lead pages as a business. Do you remember what you did?
Yeah, I mean, we what I described when I talked about how we pre-sold Lead Player, it's the same thing. It's the same series of steps. It's exactly what's in the Mixergy course. It's exactly what we did for Lead Player, and it's exactly what we did for Lead Pages. And I think what's really cool about each of these pre-sells is that every single time you do them, people see the advantages of being part of the pre-sell. You know, there's more people that don't participate in any event like this than do. So all the people who saw the Lead Player one and saw everyone who got in at a very good rate for that ended up buying into the Lead Pages one. And so there are, to this day, people paying $17 a month for Lead Pages.
Because they signed up so early.
Exactly, exactly. And then, so, and there are people that know that other people sort of got grandfathered in at that rate. And so when we do another pre-sell, you know, more people will get in. So it kind of creates a nice snowball.
Do I have this right that one of the things you said you learned by pre-selling was that people don't want a subdomain? They want instead to have a – so they wouldn't want something like leadpages.mixergy.com, but we would want mixergy.com/signup here.
So it's not that people don't want that. It's that the market we had at the time when we first launched was more interested in a WordPress plugin and more interested in publishing to Facebook and via WordPress than they were to having like pages.acmecorp.com/page name. And we're releasing that next month, the subdomain mapping. So we
and you haven't even done that until now. And your competitors at the time did do that. It was a subdomain and then the rest of the URL.
Yep. And all our competitors actually do that. And, you know, embarrassingly, we haven't done that. But at the same time, you know, we've got 42,000 customers. We've got more customers in this space. We've raised more venture capital. We have more employees, and by all metrics, are winning in this space. So apparently, everything you get hung up on having to do, you don't have to do. That said, it's time to do it. So we're doing it. It's getting done.
Let's talk about marketing.
Yeah.
First set of marketing is you going to your mailing list of people who care about Clay, who care about marketing.
Yeah.
Next set of marketing is you going out to your friends, people like me, and saying, hey, I got this new thing. If you want, please tweet it out. Here's how you could support it, right?
Yep.
At some point, you exhaust that. What's the next big marketing push that you had?
Yeah, the next big marketing push that we had was content marketing. So, you know, I heard, you've been way too influential. That's a good thing. So I was listening to the interview you did with Dharmesh Shah.
Yeah.
And he said something that really struck me. He was talking about how the nature of SaaS is that, is that because the payback periods are so long and you make your money kind of on the lifetime value of the customer, you're subsidizing upfront the customer acquisition cost because you're going to make it up over, you know, the lifetime value of the customer. So you, when you're growing really fast, you can have this unfortunate situation where the more successful you are, the more in debt you have to go or the more venture capital you have to raise in order to grow the business. Because if you have like a 2-year payback period, like HubSpot has, it's over $10,000 customer acquisition cost. So they're acquiring customers at $10,000, but their product is like $1,000 or $2,000 a month. So, you know, it takes some time to make that work. And I knew we couldn't do that. We were bootstrapped at the time. So we knew we had to go one-to-many, and we needed a much lower customer acquisition cost. So at the time, we were blogging, and the blog had gotten us our first set of customers. And I was like, how much can we scale this? So I was making a lot of videos around landing pages at the time. I hired someone to make landing pages. Then I went and I hired someone just to make blog posts. And then I hired someone just to run the podcast. And then I hired someone just to do webinars. And we actually ran our direct sales marketing team in a lot of ways like a sales organization at Salesforce. There were kind of not like sales quotas, but everyone had quotas, everyone saw the numbers, and everyone wanted to make them go up. And we were doing it with this asset that was a flywheel where if everyone stopped what they were doing, we still made sales. So we invested in our content marketing machine in the same way that maybe like HubSpot would invest in their sales machine.
So content creation was the first thing that you did, blog posts. You hired someone, you did them at first, then you hired someone. What direction did you give that person who was writing the original post? What content did you suggest that they create?
Yeah, so we basically followed the template that was set up when I was blogging before there was Pages. So here's a template, and you can download it. But now that Lead Pages is around, we could say, here's the template, here's how it works, here's the data, here's how you might apply it in your business. You can download the HTML below. If you enter your email address.
I forgot that you did that. You used to give away the template that was part of your software for free to anyone who gave you the email address, because most people are not going to install it themselves. They're going to see it, they're going to play with it, and then eventually they're going to want a tool that actually lets them use it easily.
Yep. So if you want to spend a couple days and some developer time doing the integration, you could download it, or you could be up and running in like 5 minutes with our software.
Okay. And at the time, you guys were still creating the landing pages yourselves.
Correct.
Okay. So that was content that led to email addresses that led to an email sales process. You then went on to the podcast. Did the podcast work for you? I remember listening to it when you guys got started. Very professionally done. If I'm thinking about the same one, the conversion podcast, right?
Yep.
Okay. So did that work for you?
Yeah, it did. You know, I think that what happens over time is when you first start, you're only doing the stuff that has a huge ROI. But as you get bigger, you do things that are about awareness, and they're having secondary impact. So the podcast is working from a lead generation point of view. So it generates leads for us, and that turns into business. It also raises our profile. And when you're really small, you really shouldn't be thinking about branding, brand awareness. Like when you're really small, don't even worry about your logo. Just like pick your favorite font and like type it out and then take a picture of that and make that be your logo. But later on, you should care about these things. You should care about having a conference. You should care about these things that might not be necessarily measurable. So the podcast, I would say, is ROI positive. And it serves as this nice place for fostering affiliate relationships, talking about product releases, and it's a good way to get people into our webinar.
Affiliates?
You know, we meet a lot of experts that way who have larger audiences. Like, if you're a marketing expert speaking about marketing and being interviewed on a podcast and you're pretty articulate, it's a good chance that the reason you're that articulate is because you spend a lot of time writing. And if you spend a lot of time writing, you probably have an audience. And if you have an audience, then you're probably a good fit to be an affiliate partner of ours.
And then what's your process for reaching out to them and asking them to do an affiliate partnership where they sell lead pages and make a commission?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know anymore. We've got, you know, we have a...
But there was a process put in place for that.
Yes.
Okay. And then the next thing you talked about was webinars.
Yep.
I met Tim Page in person for the first time on a cruise. That guy is so freaking... First of all, he comes across... I don't know what to make of him because he comes across online as very quiet.
Yeah.
Then you see him in person and he's tattooed, right?
Yeah, he's tatted up. Both
arms,
I think.
Yeah, fully. Yeah. Which makes me feel like a little intimidated. Maybe I'm not going to be cool enough to talk to him. And then you hear him talk and you feel like this guy just is like a nerd. Right? He doesn't want to beat me up. He wants to find out if I saw the latest Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then that guy gets up on stage and talks about doing webinars. I've never seen anyone own the room the way that he did when he talked about webinars. So freaking good. Yep. And so I wonder, at what point did you guys figure out that webinars was going to be your conversion process, your thing for getting so many new customers?
Yeah, I think there was just a realization in the market that webinars were working and we were trying everything, so we tried webinars. And what's really good about webinars is that, you know, it's appointment marketing, so people show up at a specific time and engage with you, and it's hard to even get people to watch 2 minutes of a YouTube video these days, much less spend an hour with you on a webinar. So you know, webinars were good for that, and we could guide people through an experience, and we could really teach them things that were of value. We could create aha moments and craft an experience where they were getting, you know, the majority of it was just pure content delivery and value creation, but worked into that teaching is, you know, demos of the product. So our intent was that people would leave the webinar having learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And learning principles that they could absolutely apply regardless of whether or not they ever bought our software. But if they did buy our software, you know, it would be much easier for them to implement what they've learned.
Was there a period where everything led to the webinar, where every email address would eventually get pitched the webinar, where the webinar was the reason to give an email address to?
Yeah, it definitely.
It became your biggest – was it your biggest marketing channel?
No, I don't know that it's ever – probably at the very beginning, it was our biggest marketing channel. I think that what you do in different stages of the business changes. So when you're really new to the market and it's a higher friction sale, people need to spend more time with you. And you can compress that time, or you can, like, people will buy either when they've been hearing about you for 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they hear an hour's worth of information about lead pages over 6 months, or you can give them an hour's worth of lead pages on one webinar and sort of shorten that cycle. But at some point, you know, when people see enough people using the product and they've heard about it long enough, there's just no way the number of people buying off the webinar is going to match the people that just come to the homepage and just like buy off the homepage, which is what we get now. It's like the majority of people don't even watch the video. They just kind of like
come to the homepage. They know they need the tool because they've heard it and they sign up.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Anyone out there who has a chance to listen to Tim Page talk about how to do a webinar, you got to take it. That guy's good. I have to talk about my second sponsor, which is HostGator Clay. You guys have a WordPress plugin. HostGator will host WordPress. Yep. I see a lot of these guys who build up businesses basically using nothing but WordPress websites with content.
Yep.
And then lead pages to collect email addresses, and then they start to sell them stuff via email. Like a good example of that is Brian Harris, who uses your lead boxes forever and creates lead pages with you guys. I feel like there must be a topic out there that you know of that could do well using that format. Just go host it on whatever site. I happen to like HostGator. Create content on a regular basis. Get people to give you their email address by using a lead box or a lead page, and then tell them via email about the product that you're going to sell. What topic could you create for that?
Yeah. I mean, okay, so first off, as a side note, I use HostGator. I like it. Most people get really caught up. Like, just, you know, when we were talking about the logo and all people spending forever on something, it's like, just type out what you want, you know, take a picture of your company name written out, and then like that's your logo. For hosting, just pay the $8 a month, get HostGator, just get the damn thing up and start blogging. And so like everyone talks about a minimum viable product, and what I found is before you do that, create a minimum viable audience. So just blog about whatever you're interested in. I'm really interested in Bitcoin these days. If I were going to start another business, and I don't know enough to like do this yet, but if I were like interested in this path, and again, I only have eyes for lead pages, but if I were going to do it, I'd just start blogging about Bitcoin and get an audience around that. I'd answer every single comment. I'd ask people who comment to subscribe. I'd get a list. I'd figure out what their need was. I'd probably publish maybe some sort of newsletter, some paid content or paid newsletter information product, and then I'd probably create some software around it. Like that's my playbook, and I'd pre-sell the software. So that's exactly
totally
what I do.
Copyable, exactly the way that you did it. Anyone could do it. All you have to do is go to hostgator.com/mixergy. Clay just told you it's going to cost you, what was it, $8, I think you said. I think it might even be less than that now. Wow. These guys just keep going down in price. Let me see what it is. $4.87 a month right now. It's so inexpensive. The hard part is actually moving yourself to go and get started. If you want to do it, go to hostgator.com/mixergy. They'll give you that low price, which is 30% off what other people pay. And if you're already hosting with a company and you hear me talk about how great HostGator is, and you hear Clay say that he's bought HostGator hosting package, and you hear people talk about how you can get tech support that's available 365 days a year, 24/7, all you have to do if you want that for yourself is just go to hostgator.com/mixergy, sign up, then tell them to move your WordPress site over to HostGator, and they will do it for you. You could just sit back, watch something on Netflix, and they'll take care of it for you, and you'll have that support. You'll have that great hosting package from them, and it'll grow with you as you want it to.
Yep,
hostgator.com/mixergy. Yep.
And they give you like one-click install of WordPress, and then they've got like free themes lined up, and you know, they have great WordPress hosting.
And you know what? They must be signing up a ton of people for Mixergy, because Satya texted me yesterday to say, we sold them even more. They're buying so many that I'm worried people are going to get tired of hearing me talk about a HostGator, but if they're happy with it, I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, it might get to the point where maybe you should do an affiliate deal.
I wonder if we would make more money as affiliates. I just don't like to take – I want the risk to be about how do we grow the audience and let the sponsor
– Totally.
Yeah, I decided that I don't want to do affiliates for sponsors.
Makes sense. It's not your business model.
I'll tell you where I get a lot of people requesting affiliate deals is in the interview. Like people like you saying, hey, Andrew, I'll give you a commission I'll give you a commission for this interview. They don't even say if you do anything. They know that if I get a commission, then I'll have to talk up the product. And I'm worried about that. I want anyone to hear me who get excited about something to know that it's just genuinely excitement, and I don't want the person who I'm interviewing to feel a little bit stabbed in the back when I come in with some aggressive questions sometimes, which I do.
Okay, cool.
All right, back to you. Let's talk about then the next growth. You said at every stage of development, marketing changes. So we talked about you blogging, then we talked about you hiring a blogger, then we talked about the podcast, and we talked about the webinar. What's the next step up that allowed you to go even more?
Yeah, I think it was paid media, and really figuring out paid media. You know, at one point we were spending $350,000 a month on paid media. So, and, you know, just trying to be everywhere we possibly could. At the same time, we were going to events. So we have a booth at Salesforce. We have a booth at Marketo's event. We have a booth at HubSpot's event. I believe we had a booth at Content Marketing World. You know, we're going to be so we try
booths work for you at events? People can actually spot you in this crowd of tons of other booth owners?
Yeah. The reason why, I mean Infusionsoft is great for us. You know, it really depends on the event. So we built out a small enterprise sales team, and that team will connect with people, you know, and start conversations and then finish them once the conference is over with. Yeah, so we always make our money back on events. I can't think of a single time that we didn't at least break even on the event. And then there's sort of this awareness that you can't really, you know, count at all. So that you got just by being there, people seeing your logo, people who came to the booth who never bought, but maybe they tell a friend and they end up buying, you know, that kind of thing.
You know, it seems like you guys still do some pre-sales. I saw Center, which is your tool for marketing automation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw your pre-launch of it, and there was a video by you explaining what was coming up, and you asked people if they wanted to sign up for early access, and I'm trying to find the freaking page, and I can't find it right now as we're talking, but there were hundreds of comments underneath it, right? And you were going in and responding to it, too. Oh, yep. Did I just find it? I did find it. The early adopter. There is 561 comments on this thing.
Yep.
Do you actually get to learn anything from these comments that you use to change a product, or by the time you're pre-announcing it, it's too late?
Yeah, we do. We learn quite a bit. And like we learn, again, Center has a lot of integrations. We learned what integrations to build. We learned how customers were thinking about the product. I think we do it probably for different reasons now. We've got a certain amount of engineering velocity, and we're not doing it for the money. You know, it's kind of similar to Kickstarter. People go on Kickstarter who don't even need the Kickstarter money. So we're not doing it for the money. We're not doing it because the reason I like to do it now is because it involves the entire company and the entire market in having this conversation, in this many-to-many conversation between the company and the market about what's needed. And we're 150 people now, and so I can't be the chief product officer. I can't be really the single source of truth around what we create. And so mm-hmm. we need to involve the entire company. So I still believe in pre-sales, but the reason why we do them is different now. It's to start the conversation early. It's so we're doing market-driven development early. It's so that the people on the product team that are working on this product see what's going on there. Center's kind of a different product, so engineers got to see that there's traction around this, so like they're believing in it more. So there's a lot of
You launched it, or after you started building it internally, did you start announcing it outside of the company?
Yeah, so it's a difficult question, because a lot of what we're building with Center, we needed to build for lead pages. So we had been working on it. We were building this very robust integration system on the back end. I believe that there's sort of this long tail of integrations, and that the size of your addressable market for any business like ours is constrained by the number of, it's constrained by the customer base of the integrations you support. So if you want to 10x the number of people who could potentially buy your product, the best way to do that is hook up the integrations that have associated with that 10x.
I see. You can't grow beyond a certain point unless you have Infusionsoft, because people like me who happen to use Infusionsoft can't even use you guys.
Exactly.
That's the thing that you're saying. So to grow, you need more integrations.
Exactly. So we started building this robust back-end integration system where companies could actually write their own integration with us. So like every week someone comes to me and they're like, we're this sort of niche auto dealership CRM, and if you integrate with us, you'll be the only landing page solution that works with us. And I have to tell them no, because we need to do like Zoho next or Pardot, or, you know, we have to be somewhat mercenary about this. But with this system, people will be able to like write their own integration with us fairly easily. So we were already building this fairly complex system, and then we were building an automation layer on top of it. And we saw what was coming, and that it was a lot bigger than we had originally thought, and that lead pages would end up becoming part of this thing rather than the other way around. Like, we can't be a landing page company that has a, in terms of brand hierarchy, has a platform underneath it. It's like a platform that has landing pages. So
the platform meaning, to me, tell me if I'm understanding Center right.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically allowing me to automate my marketing and my sales. So I could then say, if somebody did this, then send them this set of emails.
Yeah. So
am I right?
The problem that we're solving is that fragmentation is eating the marketing stack. That people are keeping Infusionsoft and people are keeping Marketo and HubSpot, but over time, the percentage of the feature sets of those products that they're using is less and less and less. Because if you can get a 1% increase in conversion by using a point solution landing page tool like Lead Pages, you're going to do it. And if you can get like a 0.5% better transaction fees by switching to Stripe, you're going to do that. And if you can get a little bit left better conversions by using the shopping cart, you're going to do that. And if this affiliate system, so fragmentation happens to technology stacks anyway, but that fragmentation is accelerated by the fact that businesses want to grow. And If you look at a company like Hootsuite, Hootsuite has more developers working on social than Infusionsoft has working on their entire platform. So why would you use sort of like the built-in social component of like Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever when you could like use Hootsuite, right? So this fragmentation's happening, and when everything gets fragmented, you need a management layer that allows you to run a marketing campaign across a bunch of different point solutions that weren't intended for coordinated marketing campaigns. So that's what Center is. It's a way to run coordinated marketing campaigns with a fragmented marketing tech stack.
I see. So you're accepting that we're going to continue to use all these different pieces of software, but you want to be the person that coordinates it all, like a traffic manager.
Exactly.
I see. So I'm actually looking at some of the comments here, and I could see how the comments would be helpful. Like, here's one, Donnie Lawson saying I don't think there's much of a function as I don't think there's an advantage with that with what I've seen from this platform in terms of functionality. This person is so long. Here's what Donnie's saying, though. I think your advantage in this space will be education. You guys are great at that. So I can understand now you start to get feedback about how education is useful from enough people, and you realize, all right, we have to keep beefing this up. We have to be the place where we're teaching marketers.
Or if it's an objection, like now we know that that's an objection. And so, you know, if we think they're right, then maybe that's something we should consider. If we think they're wrong, then we know that we could do a better job positioning ourselves with regards to that objection.
Like, there's another person, Christoph, who's saying, when do you expect to have the visual campaign feature live?
Exactly.
That seems to be key.
Yep.
That means it's easier to integrate it. You're smiling. Did you guys start building that?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Not because you got the feedback here, but you knew you were going to have to do that anyway, right?
Yep, definitely.
Did it move up because you started hearing people like Christoph say that they wanted the visual component faster?
Well, you know, I think it's less, you know, the seductive myth about pre-selling is that people are going to simply be putting in orders and your job is to fulfill them. Like the fantasy, you know, especially if you've never been an entrepreneur before, the fantasy is that like, all right, I'm not going to have a boss, but someone's still going to say, charge this amount, it should have these five features, it should do these six things, and then you just sort of like put it together at that, you ask people how much it should be, you average it, and you just put that out. You know, I'd say the feedback you get from pre-selling is less about what people are asking for and more about the outcome that they're looking for. So, you know, there's that famous quote about like, ask, you know, if I would have asked people what they wanted, this is from I think Henry Ford, like, I would have made a faster buggy. And, you know, I don't have any empirical evidence that he actually asked people what they wanted. I imagined that he'd hear a bunch of people say, you know, faster buggy, and hopefully a good product person would just hear faster. And they'd think, how do I get someone from point A to point B faster? And so it's less about buggy and it's more about faster.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, at the beginning of the interview, you said something that I wrote down to come back to. You said you didn't touch the funding until 4 months ago. I wondered what happened 4 months ago that suddenly got you to touch that funding.
Yeah, I think that it wasn't that like any one thing happened. It's that our appetite for creation, we decided to invest a lot more in our development team and to research and development. So when you think about the first version of Lead Pages, it was developed by 1.5 engineers, and it was developed really quickly. And then as we continued to add things to the product, you know, we collected technical debt, we moved really fast, and we added a lot of features, but it was part of this monolithic code base. We didn't have like a microservices architecture. We didn't have like automated testing or test-driven development. Like, we didn't have APIs so that the front-end developers were just consuming back-end APIs. Like, there were just so many things that we weren't doing. And those things are expensive. And if you put off developing those, you can end up in a place where like your velocity basically crawls to a stop and you just stop being innovative. And we were under threat of becoming that company because we had built up so much technical debt. And technical debt is the perfect metaphor for technical debt, because you're paying up front for something, and or you're getting the benefits of something up front, but it like interest accrues, yeah. And then you've got to pay that down.
And you had to go back and pay it down. And so when you started tapping into that funding, it's because you needed to hire developers and start rewriting. Did you rewrite the whole thing from scratch?
We are rewriting slowly the whole thing from scratch. Or not slowly. Oh. It'll be in the next few months. You'll see the new version of everything coming out. Yeah.
And now I asked you what you're working on, and you said basically it's communicating. It's talking to new people and communicating the vision for the company. Why? Why are you doing that? Don't people know what you guys are trying to do?
Yeah. When you're just five people, everyone knows what's going on. When you're eight people, even when you're 30 people, everyone kind of gets it. But when you're 150 people, it's harder to do. And not only is not everyone like hearing from you, but more details are needed because you've got highly specialized roles. When you're just when you're just eight people, everyone's doing a bunch of things, so they don't need like really granular stuff. They need like kind of the big picture, and they're juggling a bunch of balls, and they're going to get it done. But now it's like, okay, here's the vision. Here's what we want to accomplish. Okay, so what's one act? What's act one, act two, act three of that? And let's break that down into the feature sets, and who are going to be the competitors at each stage, and what's the mathematical model that justifies it, and what's the tam, sam, som, you know, the total address.
So how do you communicate all that kind of detail to them?
You know, I went back to my bread and butter, which was I went back to writing really long blog posts. So we've got a website, or we've got an internal blog. So once a month, I'll do, it's called like State of Lead Pages. So we'll have an all hands meeting, and then also once a month, I'll put out a really long blog post, and I'll have a reading list. I'll have something really high level, and it really
an
just,
external one.
It's an internal one. So
internal
it's,
one.
Yeah. So I spend just as much time producing content, I think, as I used to. It's just all internally directed to these 155 people.
You know what? I want to ask you about one more thing before we end it, and that's about the marketplace. You and I had a drink over here a long time ago after the first interview, and you told me what your vision was for the company, and I thought, great, landing pages make a lot of sense. It's a business that makes sense because we always need new landing pages. And then you blew my mind by saying, and it's going to be a marketplace. Anyone could create a landing page. And I thought, this is fantastic because it brings in more creative ideas from outside the company, and it means that everyone who creates a landing page is then a marketer for your business. Yep. I don't see that so much anymore. I don't see people actually selling landing pages on your platform the way they sell like HTML pages on Envato. Does that happen? Does it work?
Yes.
It does.
Yeah,
are helping create the marketplace by bringing in new customers?
Yes.
They are.
Yep. The marketplace did well for us in 2015. Like real
that
revenue.
That was one of the big pushes for new customers.
It was a seven figure source of new revenue for the business.
Seven figures, 2015.
Yep.
Okay.
Not over five million revenue. Not over 5 million.
Okay. But it was so actually Anne Marie Ward, who worked here with me at MixerG, is one of the designers. She actually creates land. I don't know if she does it herself or if she hires people now.
She does a
to
great
create
job.
Templates on lead pages.
Yep. And she does a fantastic job, and we give developers 100% of what they sell.
I see. All right, fantastic. I had no idea it was going so big.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do it. I think that a bunch of other projects happened, so we never optimized that to the extent that we should, but we certainly that's one of the things that we're coming back to in 2016. Is the marketplace. But yeah, that thing...
What optimization would you need to make it go bigger? Easier for them to sell?
Yeah, so I think... I don't want to give that away. This is too big for us. I can't talk about that.
All right. When's it coming?
Probably in the middle of this year.
Okay, middle of 2016. Yeah. All right, I just have to do one thing with you because otherwise I will not do it on my own. I get packages all the freaking time. I can't open them on my own. They just sit there like this obligation.
I'm like that
too. I've got a whole desk here full of this stuff. Here, Dear Andrew, good friend of ours, Nick Cullen, said that you might like socks after overhearing about the underwear you received while you were interviewing him. I didn't remember saying that, but I did get underwear, and I do like getting underwear, strangely, as a gift. So I figured I'd send you a pair of these awesome performance dress socks. Enjoy. What's life without a proper sock game? Best from Rob, Mickey, Nick. They are, what is this? Balftello Boys? P.S. My handwriting, yeah, I do have a hard time reading anyone's handwriting. I have, P.S., excuse my handwriting. I wrote I haven't written in a while and wanted to make it personal. So he wrote personally on paper.
Awesome.
Because he hadn't written in a while. And I do like these socks. These are pretty good socks, huh?
Those are cool socks.
Yeah, I actually will be wearing them. Cool. Thank you so much to Rob, Mickey, and Nick, the Balftello Boys. What does that mean, guys? Tell me. Bye. All right, Clay, thank you so much for doing this interview. Congratulations on the success with Lead Pages.
Thank you. It's been an awesome journey. And every time, every single time, like I remember when we were selling info products, I was like, I got on Mixergy. It was this thing. And so I feel like Lead Pages has made it onto Mixergy. So we're on the map again, which is great. Thanks for having me.
That you came back on here. I didn't even think to have you on because I thought, all right, we had him on. And for some reason, it just escaped me to have you back on. And then I got an email from this guy, Ben Schwartz, who said, Andrew, look at all that this, and this guy's been following you like a madman.
That guy knew everything. Like, you know, I feel like he's writing an autobiography or a biography of Lead Pages or something. That guy knows all the stuff. Like, that's
Ben
amazing.
Schwartz does?
The person that recommended, you forwarded me an email.
Oh, sorry, I take it back. It's a guy named John, and I don't have John's last name. John from TS Export. He's the guy, and you're right. He sent me this whole long email. You saw it.
Yeah, he's like, and he had this relationship with his grandfather, and he meditates, and he like, what else did he say?
This stuff.
And he's like, oh, and he used to be an ex-Mormon, and I was like, oh, that's amazing that you
We didn't even get into the Mormon part. But I'm grateful to you, John, for making the introduction and for reminding me to have you back on. And, dude, Clay, congratulations on all the success with Lead Pages. We use it. We've been customers for a very long time.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. There's a lot more coming. I feel like we have so far to go. We're like 1/20th of where we want to go with the product. So there's a lifetime of building this out.
I'm looking forward to seeing it grow. It's leadpages.net for anyone who doesn't know, and you should go over and check it out. And there's even a landing page built on Mixergy's page, so you can basically copy us by going over to leadpages.net. There are tons of ways to grow your leads using Lead Pages. And my two sponsors are the hosting company that Clay even has signed up for. It's called HostGator. Go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. And if you need to hire a developer, go to TopTal. And specifically, if you want free hours, go to toptal.com/Mixergy, and they'll set you up with a great developer or a team of developers. And of course, if you like this interview, subscribe to the podcast. Thank you, Clay, for doing this.
Andrew, as always, thank you.
Thank you all for being a part of Mixergy. Bye, everyone.